All right, everyone. Good December to you. I guess last episode was December as well. But John, do you know our last episode was our most popular episode? Apparently, people like trades.
They love trades. They just, if it was up to them, league would trade whole teams every week.
Well, we're currently in the longest ever period with no trade. I think Mark Stein, I want to say, had that recently. But
Kevin Pelton, I want to give credit for it too, because he put out something like that too. And before that was our biggest flurry, I think, that the league has seen in years, right before that. And then Chris Paul got traded for Russell Westbrook and everyone lost their minds. And we were so shocked that we couldn't do any more trades after that.
Yeah, I guess because we had more free agents than we'd ever had last year. So now as we come up on December 15th, that is basically today as you're listening to this. So maybe we'll see something happen. But we are going to talk plenty of trades in this, which is a mailbag. Thank you to everyone who submitted questions to our entreaties on Twitter. And we're just going to do about 4 minutes per team here. Every single team in the Western Conference. Let's get started here. Dallas Mavericks and a lot of really interesting Mavs questions. You can tell Mavs fans are enthused by.
Oh, yeah.
So let's ask this one here from Jay, Mr. P, 4000. I love the best part of these is reading the guys' Twitter handles, by the way. What pieces are the Mavericks missing to be real Western Conference contenders?
Well, I think besides a really great Twitter handle, the other thing they need, I think, you look, they're number one in offense, right? And they're only 14th in defense. And you look, a lot of their role players are basically offensive role players. When you look at the Curry, Hardaway, Brunson, Boban, right? I think they need to find themselves kind of one or two more meat and potatoes defenders, especially on the perimeter. That could really help them become more of a top 10 defense. I mean, as long as you have Luka, you're offensively, you're going to be pretty good, and you're probably going to rebound at a pretty high level. But obviously, his skills are much more developed on the offensive end than the defensive end. And even with Porzingis, who's a good rim protector, they just haven't quite been that level of defense.
Yeah, they haven't. They've been able to get to a pretty decent defense when they've had Kleba on the floor. But when he's off and they've been starting Powell, and Powell makes their offense absolutely unstoppable. But, you know, I don't think of him as a great defensive player either. You know, he doesn't have a ton of mobility. He could jump, but he's not an amazing shot blocker. And if he plays with Porzingis, it makes more sense to have him on the perimeter where he's not particularly effective to me. So I think if you really want to go back and look at this team's flaws, watch their game where they got blown out at home by the Clippers. That's the game where you see, all right, what are these guys missing? And the wing defender is number one. Now, the Clippers might have, other than maybe the Heatles, might have two of the best wing players that we've ever seen together on one team as far as beating one guy one-on-one. And so Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, there's not many teams that are going to have someone to guard each of those players. But I don't know that they even have one. Dorian Finney-Smith, maybe he's shooting it a little bit better, but I'm very interested to see if teams are going to guard him in the playoffs. That's really the thing to me is I don't know if I want to make a huge move right now. I want to get into that playoff crucible. They have plenty of time with this group. Porzingis hopefully will continue to improve coming off the ACL, and we'll see who can hack it in the playoffs and who can't. I do have a feeling, though, that there are going to be a lot of guys who might get exposed either on offense or defense, where, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. trying to guard either Kawhi or PG didn't look too good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so a lot of these, yeah, they have a lot of guys who are like pretty good for sixth, seventh, eighth men, but when you get down to like a lot of these playoff series come down to picking your best five and playing them 40 minutes every night, and that after Luka and Porzingis, obviously, I'm not sure they have guys 3, 4, and 5 quite lined up yet.
Yeah, and I mean, they deserve a lot of credit for getting a group that could be this good this soon. They had to go for guys really on the secondary free agent market. They also have Courtney Lee, who's basically a $12 million trade exception at this point, and they also have a $12 million trade exception to try and get better this year. Yeah, I'm very interested to see. I think I'm willing to do stuff if I'm them, as long as I don't compromise that 2021 cap space, as we've talked about, that's really the time for them. And if they're going to continue to be this good, and they're going to, I mean, they could be around a 55-win team just with what they're doing right now. If you can do that the next couple of years, yeah, maybe you lose in the second round. But you're going in with Luka poised to be maybe the best player of the next decade, and Porzingis in 2021 free agency with a max spot, looking very attractive at that point.
Yeah. For Dallas, if there's like a $10 million guy that you can get with Lee and the Golden State pick, like, sure, that, you know, who's under contract for next year. I just don't see a lot of those guys being out there.
The second round pick that they have from Golden State.
But as far as like really pushing the chips in, though, I mean, they kind of already did with Porzingis, and it's going to be harder to get that kind of third guy now without just doing it with cap space. So, like you said, I think that 21 market is their best shot. I think if they could put Dwight Powell in a trade between now and then, that might make some sense for them too, because that 11 million number for him that last year is really the difference between them having max room or not.
Yeah, and they don't necessarily have. I mean, if you're really going to look at the players on this roster, as we're almost out of time here, but you really want to look at the players on this roster, who is a two-way player? Maybe Finney Smith if you squint hard. I think Kleba definitely can be, but how many minutes can he play?
Yeah.
Porzingis, you hope.
Mm-hmm.
DeLon
Wright, maybe?
Yeah, but his shooting, you know, I really worry about that.
But he's not a great on-court fit with Luka, who obviously you want to be on the court. So that's where that breaks down a little bit.
Yeah, and Curry, you know, I think he could be a bench piece in certain matchups. You know, he defends better than his stature. We saw that in the playoffs last year. All right, let's get to Denver here. Here's one that I want to spend 4 minutes on. A lot of people basically ask this question, so we're going to get to it. What do the Nuggets need to be a real championship contender? Somewhat similar to what we talked about with Dallas. What kind of trades could they make? A lot of people asked about this. So let's start here just by identifying their needs. What are they missing to get into that top group?
To me, they're a good team that doesn't have a really great on-ball perimeter player that they can go to. And so Jokic is really talented, but it's a little different with a big. You can do all the funny stuff with him playing off the elbows and stuff, but at some point you want to have a guy who can beat a switch one-on-one and really reliably generate high-quality shots for other people. Murray is a good player, but I don't think he's that guy. I think you're more comfortable if he's your third best player. And they don't really have that guy who's the number two there. And I think that's where you really want to upgrade if you're them. And that's what got exposed a little bit in the Portland series a year ago, I thought.
Yeah, well, and at that time they had Jokic playing at a much higher level. Now, I mean, it's just they're the classic type of team to me, unless Jokic can get back to last year's level and maybe even improve a little bit. That just isn't as good in the playoffs. They got a lot of players. They've got a lot of depth. They have a system that really works. Michael Malone deserves a ton of credit for the way he's gotten these guys to defend, even if they do benefit from shooting luck to some degree. But I think there's nothing that they do that a great defense, because let's not forget, they played two crappy defenses in the playoffs last year, and they didn't look that great even against either of those.
Exactly. So, exactly.
Now, their defense is a little bit better than I expected. I still think they can be exposed by the best offenses as well when you've got Jokic at center, even if there's no Golden State out there. So, okay, here's your problem, though, I guess. Do you trade Jamal Murray? I mean, their number one problem is that the type of player that you're describing isn't really available right now.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So can you do something with the Millsap expiring or the Plumlee expiring do you get people interested in Malik Beasley or Juancho Hernangómez or Michael Porter? You know, it's tough. And they encumbered themselves on first round pick in that Grant deal. And I'm not sure that was the right deal for them.
Well, I think that it seemed like they needed another out in terms of they're not going to have cap space this summer and Millsap might leave. So they needed another player that they had bird rights on if Grant opts out to be their long-term power forward, I guess was the thought there.
Yeah, which which I get, but I just thought they handcuffed themselves a little much in the short term in order to, make that move that could push them up a notch. Now, maybe you look at them, you look at things if you're them, and you say, all our guys are in our 20s. The Lakers and Clippers are ascendant right now. We're going to wait another year. The first round pick will be gone to Oak City. Then we'll be free to do whatever we want with all our future firsts. And we'll see what it costs to keep Grant, and then we'll make our judgments.
Yeah, and I mean, their philosophy is, hey, we were ahead of schedule last year. It was fine that we lost in the second round. I mean, they should have beaten Portland, in my view, but they didn't.
Yeah.
And we're still continuing to build. We've got this core, and 2, 3 years from now, that's going to be our time. But and regardless of whether, oh, these specific teams might be worse, well, there's going to be other really awesome teams at that point. I mean, this is not necessarily a 60 win type of core. To me, that's where you need to be to get into the playoffs, unless you have LeBron James, who's not trying in the regular season, and you're Cleveland. He is trying this year, but so it's, yeah, it's really difficult for me to see. Maybe superstars become available, but I think maybe their best chance is the, okay, Kawhi Leonard wants to be traded, or someone on that level wants to be traded. And you take the Toronto risk of the guys in the last year of his contract and you pick him up. Like that's because I don't think somebody wants to go to Denver in the long term. Then maybe you hope you can re-sign him if you do well enough. I think that's the type of play that they might end up needing to make if we figure out who that superstar even is.
The other interesting question for them, do you cash in your stock on some of these guys? Like Gary Harris or Will Barton's having a great year. He's
Oh yeah.
29, Do you kind of do you see if you
They
can
need him
get
though.
somebody gets a they need him right now. That's the thing. For
Yeah.
this year, I think he's really important for them,
Yeah, I mean
especially.
it's another one too where they just don't have that 3-and-D wing type of player with any type of size. I mean, Will Barton is not a three. He cannot guard threes.
Yep, and
and
that's what they're
Millsap
asking
is
him to do. And Malik Beasley
Millsap,
is the
yeah.
same thing when they bring him off the bench. And Wancho is almost too big. Like he's a four, basically.
Yeah, and Michael Porter Jr. won't be solving your defensive problems at the three either. And Millsap is 35. So, and Millsap again is absolutely critical to what they've done defensively. They've improved so much defensively with him on the
He's
floor
probably
since they
been their
got him.
second best player this year. Him
All
or
right, that was
Barton, I
fun.
guess. Yeah.
Let's take a quick break here and get right back with Golden State. We'll do a quick lightning round on them. So I want to tell you about a great sponsor, Masterclass. They are offering an incredible deal right now. You buy yourself one annual Masterclass All Access Pass. You get another one to gift for free at our special link, masterclass.com/PER. Yes, player efficiency rating. Easy to remember. John invented it. Masterclass.com/PER. Buy one for yourself. Get one free to gift to somebody else. What is Masterclass? It's a way to learn from the absolute best in their field, whether it's Stephen Curry in basketball. My wife has taken a number of their writing classes, really, really enjoyed Margaret Atwood's class. Annie Leibovitz does photography. You can learn about TV writing, game design, tennis from Serena Williams, French pastry fundamentals. There is a master class for you, regardless of your field of interest. There are some people I know who, including my wife, who take it really seriously, and it could be taken that way, really getting immersed in it, doing the exercise, or if it's just a subject that you want to learn more about. You can just watch their cinema quality videos in any order or format you would like with your phone, tablet, Apple TV, computer. Just a great potential gift for the polymath in your life. Once again, that URL is masterclass.com/PER. Easy to remember, John Hollinger invented PER. Masterclass.com/PER. Don't forget that /PER URL to let them know that you came from us. Okay, where do you want to start on Golden State?
Oh, with sad trombone music. Okay, here's a good question from DEK B-ball. For the Warriors, what's the most likely way they could use their huge trade exception? I could see two possible scenarios for using that trade exception. One is they hang on to it until the summer, obviously.
Yeah, it has to be. They basically have like a 1 day window that they can use it after the moratorium and before it expires.
Yeah. So you could use it on a draft day trade as well. So, before July 1. So they have a couple different options with that.
That would probably put them over the hard cap, though, right? Like they're hard capped through the end of the year. So, unless the only thing they would do is if they sent out more salary, use the trade
Right.
exception to take it back, and then created a new trade exception. Is that
Yeah, so
kind of what you're
that's where
referring
I was
to?
going with this, because the name D'Angelo Russell has certainly come up. So there are scenarios where you do a Russell trade and you take back a player who would fit into that exception, like say I believe Gorgui Dieng just fits, if I'm not wrong, or does he make too much?
Yeah, it's really close.
And so let's say there was a hypothetical Gorgui does fit into it. I'm just looking it up now. He will not fit into it after the season because he gets a raise next year. So you take Gorgui Dieng and whatever into it, and you create another even bigger trade exception in a Russell deal. Now the question is, what would you then do with that larger trade exception, however, and now you don't have D'Angelo Russell, so you better be getting something else out of it. So it's tricky. I think the most likely scenario by far is that they take it into the summer and then they do some kind of trade with it that either produces a player or produces an asset plus a bad contract, and then they can turn that asset into a player.
Yeah, this is going to be maybe an unprecedented situation for a team that will certainly fashion itself a contender with Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry. That core has won a lot of games together. We'll see what they look like and whether they're too old and Klay coming off the injury just isn't as good anymore. But if they are a contender to have what's going to be probably a top seven pick at minimum and Russell and a huge trade exception like that and the willingness likely to spend. We've never really seen a contender with that type of flexibility. It's going to be very, very interesting once this summer rolls around. Bob Myers, they're going to have a lot of optionality, but they're going to have their work cut out for themselves too.
And they could potentially have the biggest payroll in league history. That I mean, if they use the whole exception, and keep what else is on their books and use their taxpayer exception and have a top five pick who's making like $8 million, like you're talking about $175 million payroll.
Yeah, and that would get very big if they're in the repeater tax, which they probably will be. You mentioned that they could get out of it this year in your piece this week, but they'd have to cut like $6 million in salary, and basically they have to trade Kevon Looney, who I think they like, although Looney is not looking good coming back from that hamstring neuropathy.
Yeah, he's kind of permanently questionable too, right? He's in, he's out.
Okay, who from this Warriors team can be a decent rotation player on next year's Warriors team? We'll talk basically about players who have not been on their team and in the rotation. We'll assume Looney comes back. He's okay. But which of the guys that are on their team right now that weren't part of the dynasty do you like to be a part of a winning team next year?
The guy who might have some kind of chance is Omari Spellman, just because his ability to shoot, I think, becomes more potent when you put him around Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, and the big is really reluctant to leave him then. So, he's the one who, if he's in shape, he could add enough offense that you live with whatever he gives you on defense. I think Eric Paschal is certainly shown he's an interesting player, probably more of like a bench scorer guy, but he's definitely proven that he's something. We'll see how he fits when those other guys come back. Like I said, he's probably more like a second unit guy, but I think he's going to be in the mix somehow. I think a lot of these other guys, frankly, are not part of the future.
Yeah,
And
I mean, people here are talking up GR3.
yeah, who's been okay, but he's on a 1 year minimum. So even if he has a good year, he's gone, right?
Yeah, you would think so, right? And you also say, well, we could dip into our taxpayer mid-level to bring him back, but there's so many veteran free agents that aren't going to have markets above the mid-level exception because nobody has cap space next year that's any good. You might be able to do better than him, even if he has played well. I mean, they could give him 120% raise off the minimum, but and he has been very happy here. So I wouldn't rule out that he could come back on a minimum, but it seems unlikely. Spellman, I disagree with you on a little bit. I think he's, maybe playoff ninth man, but you know, you put him against Houston, he's not going to stay on the floor to me. Okay, next team here. Houston Rockets. We'll do another lightning round here.
Okay.
Why don't we start with this one from Lethargic Plays Games. Lethargic J. With D'Antoni probably in his last year in Houston, is there another team looking for a coach next season where D'Antoni and his style make sense? Who makes sense as the Houston coach? I mean, besides whoever is cheapest. That's in the question. That was not me saying anything.
Well, I wrote about this with Sam Amick for The Athletic this week, just about the general coaching musical chairs scenario. I think everyone in the league expects Mike D'Antoni to be coaching someplace else next season. I think there's just too much water that has gone under the bridge in Houston. Maybe if they won a championship, that could be forgotten and forgiven. I think otherwise there's going to be a change there. And D'Antoni will be a hot free agent. So where could he go? The Bulls job might be open. Let's say, let's see who's making the call there. Their history is a little weird on coaching hires. Like they passed on D'Antoni once already, that group, when he interviewed with them. You hear the Knicks, and I think that's an interesting name.
Would he go back there?
Not under current management, but if you imagine that there's somebody else in charge on the basketball operations side, then I think he would look at that job more openly.
Yeah, what else is going to be open next year?
There's always stuff that is going to be open that you never anticipated.
I guess the only – maybe Washington. What about Washington?
I think Scott Brooks looks pretty safe there. They've kind of been okay, and they're not – they didn't have super high expectations this season.
He is guaranteed at $7 million for next year too.
What about New Orleans?
Ooh, I mean, don't they already have – Mike D'Antoni as the coach? And they already got Jeff Bizdelic too.
There's a lot of systemic overlap. That'd be an interesting one. You're right. They might go in a little different direction. Somebody a little more defensive minded there after the way their season has gone so far.
Well, my takeaway from your article with Sam was that Alvin had his contract guaranteed for next year, and that, you know, he's going to at least be given a chance with their full roster. They have been decimated by injuries, but they also can't stop anyone. All right, let's get to one that's actually Houston related here. Are the Rockets even a 3-and-D forward away from really being a championship contender, or are they even further behind teams like LA, the Clippers, and Milwaukee? That's from at Petty Rocket.
Yeah, what does this team look like when Eric Gordon comes back? What does Eric Gordon look like when he comes back?
Oh, yeah.
Because he's a guy who could really help them, I think, get out of some of the funks they're in some nights. Where, I mean, they're a really good offensive team. You know, obviously, just the fact they have James Harden guarantees that. But I think on those nights where they need a little more juice beyond just Harden, Gordon's been able to give them that a lot in the past, and was not able to at all the first nine games this year, where he was injured and looked and played very much like an injured guy. And you wonder when you get to these playoff situations, the teams really start throwing hard doubles at Harden and just basically say, we're going to turn the game over to Westbrook and live with whatever he does, that having that additional high-level weapon is a thing they're going to need, because they're not a great defensive team. I mean, they could use another 3-and-D guy that's kind of at a higher level than Daniel House is, let's say. But you just don't see a means for them to acquire that player. If they're, you know, they need to stay below the tax line. We think they are basically cleaned out on assets. So how do they get there?
They can still trade 2020 and 2022 first round picks. So they have a little bit. I think the lack of matching salary other than Gordon is maybe a bigger – I mean, it seemed like they were going to move Gordon and Capella to try to get Jimmy Butler to get signed and traded there this year. So maybe those guys and two first round picks and you can get in the mix for a star who is not actually available. It seems like maybe that move happens in the summer after this year, though. Maybe they just, you know, when Gordon comes back, which when's that supposed to happen? Maybe like, you know, three, 4 weeks.
Christmas or so. Yeah. That was the latest update I saw.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was the 6 to 8 weeks knee surgery that never actually takes 6 to 8 weeks.
Exactly.
Okay. Let's get to the Clippers here. Any of these questions pop out to you? 4 minutes on the clock for them.
Well, here's a guy I was thinking about as I was watching the game last night. Bewilder DVM asks, how critical is it that the Clippers hold on to Montrezl Harrell next year? Which I think is becoming a really interesting question, because I think coming into the year, you would have thought, okay, they'll be able to keep him with bird rights and it might be a little expensive, you know, it might be like 10 to 15 or whatever, but that's fine and they'll pay it. And now he's playing so well that you're kind of like, huh, like he may get 20. Like if you're the Clippers, do you really want to pay that, or do you look in a different direction?
Do you see any of the forlorn five, as you coined the term, wanting him?
You know, it's always harder with bigs to find a fit. That's the one thing that the Clippers have going for them, I guess, with this, is that there's always a surplus of fives and fours on the market, and that tends to drive their price down. I wonder about him in Charlotte.
Cleveland needs a center. They would love to have a real pick and roll partner for their young guards who have not been doing much so far.
That's true. And, you know, you presume they're going to move off of Kevin Love as well.
And think of how well he'd fit with Julius Randle and Mitch Robinson in New York.
Well, yeah, obviously, as a non-shooting big, I mean, that's the one thing that I think the Knicks really need. So they're going to have to.
But Trez better hope that Steve Mills and Scott Perry are still in charge this summer.
Yeah, that, I mean, that could, because you're right. I mean, if they decline the guarantee on Bobby Portis and, you know, Wayne Ellington and some of these other guys, they'll have a ton of money to spend. I don't see a fit for him in Memphis.
No.
And who's that? Is that our entire five? Let's see. Oh, Atlanta. Atlanta. That's, he's a tough one. I mean, John Collins is kind of in that role right now. So
yeah. I mean, Collins and him together. I mean, they've been playing Collins next to a traditional center. I mean, that would be him, Collins, and Trae Young. That's a pretty awesome offensive core. And then you just put some 3-and-D guys around them. What do you think of Trez's defense this year? That's the big question, right? I thought he could be a trade candidate because he was a free agent. And because he's not that good defensively. But he's been better this year. Not amazing, but better.
He's been better. I mean, he's undersized and he's not super instinctive. So he's just like, he just kind of does it with energy, but he's been better this year. Definitely. Yeah. But I still don't know. But like as a starter, like you're basically paying him as a starter at this point.
Right.
That's where it gets tricky. You need some good, you know, like one other good big around him. Hey, what about Trez in Dallas? How good would that be?
Yeah. I mean, they've already got Dwight Powell there that they're paying $11 million a year. So that might be, I don't know that I see the fit there. I think he'd be a little bit better of a version because he can do more off the dribble and make decisions if you're going to trap Luka. But, okay, one more question for these guys.
Okay.
Who would you take when healthy? We had a number of these questions, including from Peter Markgraf at Dat Dude Big Pete.
Okay.
God, these are amazing. Who would you take in a 7-game series, if healthy, between the Clippers and Lakers? Got like 30 seconds for this one.
Man, that would be a war. I just don't know how the Clippers deal with Davis. It's easier for me to see ways that the Lakers deal with Kawhi and Paul George than it is for me to see the ways that the Clippers deal with Davis.
Well, but isn't one of those ways LeBron has to guard one of those two guys? Can he do that at this point in his career, guard either Kawhi or PG?
I think he can guard Kawhi. I mean, Kawhi does so much with strength, and I think that gets a little neutralized against somebody like LeBron.
Yeah.
So
I mean, but LeBron hasn't actually guarded a real threat on the other team in the playoffs in like 8 years.
Okay. What can you do against them? I guess Danny Green and KCP are both a little small to be playing against.
Yeah. We saw that in the opener. I mean, well, Danny Green can take one of them, but who's guarding the other one? Like KCP got worked in the opener by Kawhi. So, I mean, maybe you just have to deal with it. And I mean, the other question that we'll come into too is like, all right, is LeBron and Kawhi, are they going to play the four? Or are they going to play the three? And who's going to pull the card first of putting LeBron or Kawhi at the four and really causing potential matchup problems for the other team? Is it a small series or is it a big series? It seems like all the players, at least on these teams, want to play big. Lakers have actually, as we'll get to, have been better offense, or really with another big next to Davis, which we didn't expect.
Mm-hmm. Boy, so, I think the Clippers try to get this small, get Lou Williams out there.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, then Lou,
speed,
though, I mean,
speed LA up a little.
This is the team. I mean, you just, with LeBron out there, he is going to relentlessly punish whatever mismatch you have out there. He's the best, maybe, in NBA history at doing that. And if you have Lou out there, they're going after him every single time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then it turns into a cat and mouse game of how do you hide him? Lakers have fewer guys you need to hide that way.
Does it concern you that by league rule the Lakers have home court advantage in all seven games?
We have not discussed this, but that would be a probable result, and that would be pretty amazing. It would be like that. Do you remember when Chicago and Milwaukee played in the playoffs?
And it was 2015. Yeah,
it'll be like that, but worse.
Yeah, I can't wait to see. We need to get a little more information, and we'll get it on Christmas Day. Hopefully, we won't see too much load management then. Let's get to those aforementioned Lakers. I thought this was an interesting one here. I mean, because LA has been pretty damn good this year, at least in terms of their overall record, 23-3, as are the Bucks, per cleaning the glass, plus 8.9 net rating in non-garbage time. You know, they've outperformed their expected record by 3.3 wins right now. But this is still a question maybe worth talking about. 22-3 is 22-3. At Dan Soch, is it possible the Lakers are actually a historically great team? If they win it all easily, could we look back on this as these guys were just that good all along? And what are the signs that this was coming?
Yeah, I think that's still a reach. I mean, one, are they the best team in the league right now? No, I would say Milwaukee is.
But do you think Milwaukee looks like a better playoff team than them to you?
I think that's debatable. But we were just arguing about whether we take the Clippers or the Lakers, right? If they were like this huge unstoppable force, would we really be having that debate?
The Clippers look pretty nasty in the playoffs too, though. I mean, these teams have a lot of talent.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's a pretty high bar you're setting, and you're talking about a team with two all-star players and basically a lot of role guys after that.
Yeah, that's true, but I mean we've seen that formula be amazing. And I think they're above those two guys are probably two of the top 6 guys in the league so far this year, maybe top 7.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
And it helps that, you know, the second and third best players in the league are basically not playing this year as well. So everyone kind of gets bumped up a little bit. You know, no Steph, no KD. You don't have to face those guys in the playoffs. That helps you a lot.
Yeah, I still, you know, you look at the secondary names on this team. It's like, okay.
Yeah, Danny Green is their third best player.
Yeah, exactly.
But, yeah, I mean, LeBron and AD are really, really, really good. I mean, that's pretty clear to me. You know, I think they do have some guys who are a little bit limited. They're going to be very reliant on the shooting of guys like KCP, Bradley, Rondo, Caruso.
Mm-hmm.
Kuzma has been, you know.
Yuck, yeah.
So it hasn't looked comfortable, hasn't really fit in. You know, looks like he's kind of fits in better on a worse team. So maybe it depends if they can make a move involving him and get – let me ask you this. If they're not at that level, what do they need to get to that level? Do they need another scorer, another playmaker, or do they need just, you know, more 3-and-D role player types?
I think they just need another highly capable offensive player on the perimeter. So somebody who can make more plays on the perimeter after LeBron gets rid of the ball and be a playmaker when LeBron is out of the game.
Yeah, what does this team look like when LeBron goes up against guys that he can't just overwhelm physically? mean, there are not many of those guys in the league, but some of them play for the Bucks and some of them play for the Clippers. So,
absolutely. And Philadelphia. Yeah. But,
and let's not forget, he looked awful against LA in that first game. Now, you know, that's just one bad game. Don't want to go too crazy about it. But yeah, man, this has been great. I'm getting so excited for that potential matchup. All right. Your old haunt. Actually, here, let's do a quick read first, and then we'll talk about the Memphis Grizzlies, John's old team, in which he will use no inside information to answer these questions. Oh, wait. Time to get to the Memphis Grizzlies.
All right.
The one that I wanted to hit. Did you have one? Sorry.
No, you go ahead. You pick the question, and then I'll fire away.
Okay. There's just a few mentioning this here, but what do you see as Ja Morant's destiny right now here? I mean, how excited should you be about what we've seen from him in the first couple months of the season?
Yeah, I think the Grizzlies have a lot to be excited about, because you can see already that he does a lot of things that are really hard to teach in terms of where he gets with his handle, the passes he makes, and some of the things that are his weaknesses right now are the things that are the most fixable, in terms of, you know, maybe straightening out his jump shot a little. I know he's shooting 42% on threes, but it's on low volume. People still go under on him. And, you know, some of the maybe overambitious passes and just filling out his body physically. I mean, those are like the easiest things to deal with, right? The hard stuff is finding a, you know, 20-year-old point guard who can murder Aaron Baines on a switch.
He does stuff with the ball two or three times a game that you don't see from anyone else. Like, he is one of the most creative ball handlers that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. No, it's totally true. And, you know, it was funny because I saw him early last year scouting him, and like, it was the same thing. Like, there were a lot of mistakes, but there were just these moments where you're just like, nobody does that, you know? Like, a guy came down on him on a break and he just like went up and had a two-hand shot block. And it wasn't like he came from, you know, it wasn't like a surprise block. It was like his man coming at him. And it was like, you just watch that. You're like, nobody does that. Like, what was that I just saw? And I think you see that again this year with the Grizzlies. And, you know, he's only going to get better in kind of those more mundane areas, I guess, where he does have to get better over time. I think the biggest thing you worry about with him is just his ability to hold up physically.
Yeah.
With his dimensions.
Yeah, that's definitely a concern. I mean, just some of the landings that he has. He's already had a knee surgery this off season, and I mean, the way his athleticism, the way he's able to just take off seemingly without a plan 12 feet from the basket and finish these layups is just unbelievable. I mean, he just goes through guys, he goes over guys, scoop layups. I mean, he's going to only improve his finishing package, but the history of these hyper athletic point guards is not amazing in terms of longevity. Russell Westbrook has been pretty good, although now really 30 or 31, he is kind of done. But, you know, Derrick Rose, John Wall, two other comparable players. Yeah. To him, Dennis Smith really never even got started, maybe in part due to physical stuff. So you do think that maybe the time horizon is a little earlier for him than your typical, oh, you know, when he's 27, 28, that's when we're building towards.
Yeah.
They might want to be a little more aggressive there. I mean, but let's say he doesn't get hurt. Do you see him as, you know, a perennial All-NBA type of player?
I think All-Star, I think is one that I could see. All NBA just depends on, I think that still depends on variables that are harder to predict. Sure. You know, when you talk about that level of good, you know, how good is he really going to be as a shooter? I think we just don't know. And I think that's going to be a swing variable that really determines if he's just a good player or is like an awesome player.
Yeah. But especially when you consider that rookie point guards. Now, he is a year older than some of the guys who have come in lately, just one and done. So that's worth considering also, that this is kind of, you know, you compare him to those sorts of players in their second year, perhaps.
Yeah, but I mean, but he was playing against SIU Edwardsville last year and like all these other teams in the OVC, right? So like the step up in competition for him has been enormous, and he's dealt with it tremendously.
I think if he stays healthy, I see him as a top 15 player in the league. I feel comfortable with that. Maybe not all NBA just because there are more guards than others in some years, but yeah. And obviously they're going to have to get more around him. They're going to have to actually start winning for him to get in that type of consideration, but he'll be a big part of that. All right. We got a good one here from Minnesota at Nate Westerman. If you were running the Wolves, do you think you'd trade Robert Covington at the deadline, considering how weak the market is? I assume when he says how weak the market is, meaning that there's not much being traded right now. I don't know if I agree with that, but how large of a return could he get? Or do you hold on to him because they would just be hopeless defensively without him?
Well, I think as the losses mount for Minnesota, I think they have to at least think about the idea of what his trade value would be and whether that makes sense for them. I mean, you could probably get a good first for him, right? Does that matter to you for Minnesota, though?
I mean, I would think that it would. I mean, they got to get some ammo for the D'Angelo Russell trade, right?
That actually is a plausible trade, though. Covington and Gorgui Dieng for D'Angelo Russell. Like, what about that?
Well, okay, that's... The Warriors would never do that. There would have to be some big time picks involved. The Warriors taking on $17 million in dead salary of Jang for next year. I mean, that would be anathema to them. Also, couldn't happen until the offseason because they'd be taking out money unless Looney were also involved in that trade. And they're so close to the hard cap, they can't do that. Covington, just so we have it here, this is his age 29 season, makes 11 this year, 12 next year, 13 the year after that. So, 30 and 31, he's taking a little bit of a step back this year, I would say, offensively. He's got that knee issue.
Hasn't quite been that guy this year at either end. And I think that's one of the reasons you have to look at it, that he still has 2 years to go. But maybe a team that's in more of a win-now mindset would take the plunge on him.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe if you're Golden State – yeah, and I don't see that trade happening until the summer anyway with Russell. I think they want to see what he looks like with Steph and maybe even Clay if he came back at the very end of the year.
There's no urgency for Golden State to do a deal like that this year, really, unless they want to recycle the trade exception. That would be the only reason to do it.
Yeah, I agree. So now the Lakers, I'm sure, would have some interest. Getting together some matching salary there could be kind of difficult as well. In the Clippers, maybe they try to get him just to keep him away from the Lakers. I've kind of been thinking about that with Andre Iguodala too, mm-hmm. where maybe the Clipper Memphis says, hey, we're gonna buy out Iguodala and he's gonna sign with the Lakers Clippers unless you give us some assets for him.
Yeah. No, that would
and it might be worth it.
You never know. Would you do Harkless for Covington?
I think I would, just because you want a little bit more shooting. I mean, Harkless is more of a four. I think they could use more of a 2-3 type. I might like Harkless to me is a better individual defender. Covington is a better team defender. I don't know if Covington can guard LeBron. He's a little too slight there. Mm-hmm. Maybe Harkless could, but no, if it was straight up, sure. But I don't know why Minnesota would do that. You're also going to throw in like your 2020 first rounder that the Clippers can trade. I mean, that's a big piece for them. I don't know if they want to do it for a relatively marginal upgrade on the wing, but I guess you do get him for 2 more years.
You get him for two more years. Yeah.
That's a thought. And for Minnesota is just, the essentially, because Harkless can walk after this year, is the, number 27 pick in the draft this year. Is that worth moving Covington?
I don't think it is right now. I think if they get to the trade deadline and they're out of the race, they have to look at that. I mean, because the thing you always have to have in the back of your mind, if you're Minnesota, even though Karl Towns is on year one of a 5-year extension, you don't want to get to the point where that thing is irreparable and he starts trying to push his way out. And so I think you have to have that always in your mind, is how do we get back to being pretty good pretty quickly.
Yeah, I don't think we should actually answer this one, but I did want to give a shout out, since you mentioned Towns, to at Hot Take Gabe 407, who asked, if the Wolves decided there was no hope, what would be the best return for Karl Anthony Towns? That's a solid hot take. You're living up to your name there, Gabe.
I think we're a year or two away from that question.
All right, 4 minutes on the clock for the New Orleans Pelicans here. And you said of this question in your notes, fantastic topic. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say from William Kelleher. Should the Pels sell high on Brandon Ingram?
Yeah, here's basically, you have two avenues with Brandon Ingram and only two. He is definitely getting a max this summer, right? So
definitely
you need to decide.
Getting a max.
What's that?
Definitely getting a max, huh?
I think you look at the forlorn five, as we call them, Atlanta, Charlotte, New York, Memphis, and Cleveland. All five of them need another perimeter player who can score. Ingram is young enough that any rebuilding team is going to want him, and there's almost nobody else worth paying. So the market clearing price is going to be a max.
Do you
especially buy, with the season he's yeah. having.
Do you buy Ingram shooting? 41% from three on six attempts per 36 minutes when he basically had been at like, you know, three attempts per 36 minutes and not amazing percentage before this year.
Yeah, I'm still a little suspicious on that. There are two levels to the question though. Do you buy that he's improved? And then do you buy that his improvement is as massive as his stats currently show?
Also 85% from the free throw line when he'd been shooting in the 60s before.
That's pretty impressive.
It really is, right? And who's the coach in, I should remember.
Vincent. The coach. Vincent. New Orleans shooting right. coach has a reputation. And I know like when we had,
he's
when we
fixed
had
Lonzo too.
What's that? Yeah.
Lonzo is fixed too.
It yeah. He little, de- it de- I mean, no, not- it definitely looks better. It's more in the center of his body. And he's a little bit more comfortable now shooting it on a step back to his left, where that was like an impossible shot for him before. But, you know, Vince has been there a long time. We had Quincy Pondexter in Memphis, and he always gave Vincent credit for making him a shooter because he was a non-shooter at Washington. That guy has produced results.
So back to the question, though, of the idea of selling high on him. So question number one is he worth that max contract?
Mm-hmm.
And I think you do still, I think it's tough to do it because if he shoots it like this, I'm still not a huge believer in him defensively, but he's also, you know, he's only 22, this age 22 season.
Exactly.
And, you know, the fit with Zion, I was extremely skeptical of, but if he can shoot it, I mean, okay, maybe it's not be 41%. But if he's even, you know, 35% and he gets decent volume, now you can play him with Zion. Now that can maybe be your foundation and he can continue to improve. I hated that fit when they made the trade. I mean, they had to do it because that's just what was available. But,
yep.
Certainly he deserves quote unquote credit for their crappy defense. He's been part of that to be mm-hmm. sure.
He's also playing the four when he really shouldn't be, I'll say in his defense.
Yeah, no, I think, and especially the four next to a paper tissue center.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's tough, certainly.
Yeah, probably the only front line in the league that weighs less than 200 pounds combined.
Yeah, between him and Hayes. Oh, man. So if you think he's worth the max, then you just keep him, right?
Yeah.
And we're going to have approximately 2 weeks of data at best of him and Zion playing together, which sucks.
So yeah, you got to me. You have to know your answer to this by the trade deadline, and know whether you're looking to cash out.
There would be hope, maybe, of getting something in a sign and trade, but not as much as you could get for him now.
Exactly.
So I mean, what would you be enough? I mean, I guess you could just ask around, hopefully discreetly, and it doesn't get back to him. That would be something interesting to talk about. Of like, how do you have trade talks about someone and have it not get back to the player? I'm sure that's something you had to deal with.
Usually you kind of know which teams are discreet and which ones are not. And so you kind of, but there are times where you inevitably have to deal with teams where you're kind of, wondering how discreet they're going to be. And so that's always a little dicey. But something like this, I mean, you'll know who's interested though. They'll tell you they're interested. You know what I mean? You don't have to fish for that. And then it just becomes a question of at what level you want to engage on something and how much you trust these other teams to keep it on the down low, or if you reach a point where you don't care if it's on the down low or not, because you're definitely doing it.
Well, all right, here, we've gone long on this, but it is fascinating. In 20 seconds, tell me what kind of a return it would take to get you interested in trading him at the trade deadline if you're the Pels.
A real first that isn't like the 27th pick and is almost guaranteed to convey. And maybe a second on top of that, but the first is the absolute floor. I would ask for multiple firsts, but I'm just saying at the end of the day, if it got down to the deadline, what's your drop dead? If you decide he's not worth the max, I think that's where you exit.
Okay, but well, yeah, but you make that decision for me. You're saying he's not worth the max, then?
I still think I would be very skittish about giving him a max.
I mean, this is not a free agent destination
yet.
New Orleans. Hmm. I mean, I think even with Zion being good, I think I still struggle to see it, frankly.
No, you raise a fair point right there.
Yeah.
Who else are you getting if you have that additional money?
And you know what? All right, you have to overpay him for, you know, if he plays like this, to me, you know, maybe he's not a max player, but again, he's only 22, right?
Yeah.
So
that contract should still be movable after you sign it, as long as he doesn't have health problems. So now I'm arguing against my own argument here.
Yeah. To me, it's like two real first round picks. Also, remember this too. They got a bunch of first round picks in the future, and they're going to have another really good one this year. Like, how many first round picks can you really make use of?
That's the dilemma Boston ran into a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, to me, it's, you know, two first round picks that you would expect to be 15th or better. That's where it's going to, so in other words, you know, just a little less than the Cavaliers are expecting for Kevin Love.
That seems fair.
that's a good transition here. Here's another one that you're interested in. At Lester Freeman. Oh yeah, that's a hell of a name there. Good Wire reference. OKC has a ton of draft picks coming in a few years. Ah, quite salient since we just kind of got on this topic. Is there a point where it becomes impractical to play/evaluate so many prospects on the same timeline?
Yeah. I mean, there's only one ball, only five guys who can play. So, yeah, there are diminishing returns to having a gazillion draft picks. Philadelphia's dealt with that a little bit in the last couple of years. Boston's dealt with it a little. And it's certainly going to be an issue for Oklahoma City if you look at all this draft pick inventory they're sitting on. Now, one of the ways you deal with it is you try to assemble multiple picks to move up in individual drafts, right? Try to shift a little bit more toward quality from your quantity.
Those are usually very poor value trades, the history of those.
Usually the team that trades up feels worse about it. There are exceptions, obviously. I think Dallas feels pretty good about the Luka trade. But in general, has not worked out well for the team trading up. There are other ways to deal with it. The Euro stash route where you use picks on players who are overseas and will stay there for a year or two, so you can kind of draw up the timeline a little bit.
The Nikola Milutinov, Andrzej Pashnik's.
Yes. Now, ideally, you want it to be more like the Tiago Splitter model, where he comes in and he's immediately good.
Yeah, that works a little better in the second round to me. The first rounder there, that's a little tough. The history of using first rounders on Euro stages, I guess Valanciunas waited a year. That was okay.
But I'm saying that because these firsts are, they're Clippers, they're Denver, they're Miami, they're Houston. You know, these are going to be picks in the 23 to 30 range.
Okay. I don't know about that. Once you get to 2024 Houston, I think that could end up.
Okay. Yeah. Good. 2023 Miami also, which it's top 14 protected actually. So
yeah,
I'll take that back.
And Clippers, who knows? Who knows where the Clippers are going to be in 2024, 2025. I mean, I think it does, to me, become more difficult because they're going to have their own picks over the next couple of years. The hope probably for them is like they're actually starting to get good right around the 2024, 2025 time when this is coming due. And then I think it is more of a concern of how many of these picks can you use?
Yeah.
Can you develop these guys? If you're bad, I don't think it matters that much because, hey, you know what? Half the draft picks don't work out anyway. So this idea of like, oh, how can we use all these guys? Well, think of it as we really only actually have half of these picks because in likelihood, half the guys we pick are going to suck.
Well, and they're coming into a roster where there aren't that many keepers that you're holding over either.
Yeah.
I mean, when they get to next year is really like a core guy that they're, super excited about. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Darius Bazley, probably, maybe. And that's about, maybe Ferguson. He'll be on the last year of his rookie deal. We'll see if he,
No,
if he's
I
really
agree
part of
with
the
you.
future or not. But after, I mean, these guys like Chris Paul and Gallinari and Steven Adams, like they're gonna be long gone by 22 and 23 anyway.
Yeah, you would imagine so. I mean, they really have so little, and there's also been reporting that they're going to be a bad contract dumping ground these next couple of years. I mean, I think actually that, maybe next year and the year after, they might actually be worse than they are this year.
Oh, I could easily see that. Yeah, I mean, right now they're like inadvertently headed to the playoffs because the rest of the West has been so bad. The only thing I see about them taking on a bad contract is like for what? Because you're getting another first at that point, which you get into some real diminishing returns there. You'd almost rather they use the money to more proactively to target players to sign that they might like. And could be part of what that next generation is.
All right, next team here, Phoenix Suns. Let's do a lightning round for these guys. Connor Bryant, what moves make sense for the Suns to improve? Is Tyler Johnson a giant negative asset, or does he still have credibility about the league? I'll take the second part of that question, Mike.
Oh, you beat me to it. I was volunteering for
Well, all right. In that case, feel free. I thought that was, I thought we could deal with that
Low
quickly at least.
hanging fruit there.
But all right. He's terrible at this point, which is kind of too bad. But he has, makes about 19 million. He is their matching salary.
Exactly.
That's what he is right now.
So they at least have that going for them. And then, what moves make sense for them? I think you got to be careful not to get caught up in the chase for the eighth seed and make moves that you'll regret a year or two from now, because you're really still trying to look out toward what your team can be a couple years down the road with Booker and Ayton and, maybe Oubre and Rubio and, Cam Johnson, Ty Jerome, whatever. And try to build that team 3, 4 years out. And what does that team need? I think they would still like, a 3-4 with a little more juice. I think you still have to wonder about the point guard spot when you look more 2, 3 years down the road. I mean, Ricky's been fine right now. I think that acquisition has really helped them solidify which was a glaring weakness a year ago. But I still think you have to have that building mentality though, and not get caught up in the short-term chase. And you worry about Phoenix doing that given their history.
Yeah, and Rubio, yeah, he's really helped. I mean, they have a 116 offensive rating with him on the floor, which is absolutely insane. But with him now, age 29 season, and he's not really a playoff player due to his shooting limitations. When you can scheme for him, it becomes a lot more difficult. So yeah, I mean, point guard, power forward, those long-term point guard, long-term power forward. And, you also got to see what DeAndre Ayton actually looks like once he comes back, right? And can he defend at a high enough level? If he can actually be an adequate defensive center, then your priorities change. You might need a Paul Millsap type of guy at the four. I mean, Millsap's old, but, someone who maybe, Thad Young again, the next generation of that type of a player
Exactly.
next to Ayton. If he's not really that good defensively, have someone else who can help him out the way Millsap has with Jokic. Not that Jokic is much better than Ayton has been defensively in his career. Ayton has more tools. So yeah, and then that point guard too, ideally someone who can shoot, the next generation of George Hill. So there's a lot that they need. And then, your question becomes how good are Ayton and Booker going to be? That's where your fate really rests. But to build around those guys, the one and the four to me are it. Let's see here. Kelly Oubre, we talked about him a couple weeks ago, actually, in our mailbags. We can skip that one. This will be fun. And band seven, Andrea Bendisiol. Bendisiol. I'm not sure
I think it's
my accent
Bargnani's
today.
burner account, I think.
If the Suns would have drafted Doncic, would they have been a contender this year or next year already? What do you think?
Wow. Well,
Not as good as Dallas, right?
no, but you know, the unknowable thing at the time was that Aaron Baines would come in and play as well as he did, because yeah, you'd have a high level wing there.
I think you got to look at where they were then. If they have Doncic, I think everything changes quite a bit.
Yeah,
they might make more free agent signings,
or different ones. They might have gotten better players to come.
Is Ryan McDonough still the GM?
Yeah, yeah. On the 1 year anniversary, I have to mention this. Does the Brooks trade still happen?
That actually,
they wouldn't have had any need for Kelly Oubre if they had picked Luka.
Yeah, well, I think Oubre actually is not a terrible fit next to Luka. But yeah, I mean, Ryan McDonough, I think, basically got fired because he couldn't get a point guard, and he could have just said, "Well, Luka's our point guard."
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. If only they could have found a way to, like, you know, just put Luka in a U of A hat or something before the draft, and maybe Sarver would have.
Yeah.
So no, I think they'd be behind where Dallas is. They don't have as good a coaching. Kokoschkov would probably still be there, though. That's another aspect of it.
Yeah, you can bet on that. I mean, Dallas also did a great job with Luka physically, which I think has been overlooked a little bit. I mean, the Suns training staff had been well regarded, but I don't know if you can just assume that happens in another place.
So they wouldn't have had a center at that point. They would have had.
You know what, though? They would have kept Rashawn Holmes.
Yeah, God, he is definitely. Has been way better than I thought he would be this year. So no, I think they'd clearly be behind Dallas. Dallas really, I mean, don't forget Dallas traded for Porzingis as well, who I think has really helped, even if he's disappointing in his individual offense.
Mm-hmm.
And they also had role players like Dwight Powell already in place.
Kleba, they were able to do the deal for DeLon Wright. They drafted Jalen Brunson, yada, yada. Yeah. They've been able to do a lot of stuff on the edges of their roster.
So, no, I think Phoenix would be significantly behind there. Okay, Portland. This is from at Option Zero, JDM. Does CJ McCollum pass the Nene test going forward? That's a term that Danny LaRue, for listeners who don't listen to Dunked On all the time, that my partner Danny LaRue created to basically indicate, is this guy a positive or negative contract in trade value? Give you the numbers on McCollum. He has $27 million this year. 29 next year, 31 the year after that, 33 the year after that, 36 the year after that in the 2023-24 season.
Yeah, that was a hefty extension.
So it doesn't even kick in for 2 years.
Yeah, yeah. Now I haven't heard this term. Terminology I always used with Nene was when Masai was the GM there in Denver. I called it the Masai Ujiri delayed sign and trade.
Yeah. Okay. So this is it's kind of the same thing here. Of is basically like, hey, we signed this guy, we're thinking he's got positive trade value at this number. So that's why Danny called it the Nene test, because that was the question of would he have positive trade value at that number or not.
Right. You know, I mean, we value wings who can score. I think in a playoff environment, CJ's probably more valuable than in the regular season. Not really a plus defender, although he has a weirdly good instinct for blocking shots. I see that as more a minus than a plus, because as you go out that many years, there's unquestionable downside risk, you know, when you take this guy's age out that far. So I think that's a real question. Now, the other question is, did they do this thinking about trades at all? I just think they think they're just going to keep Dame and CJ together for, you know, for eons.
Yeah,
I just think that's their operating mentality.
Yeah, I mean, CJ 53% true shooting.
Yeah,
not really that
not
great.
For an offensive guard, that's not great. Yeah, he's 28 years old. You're paying him till he's like 33. I mean, I agree that that's a move they should be looking at. I just don't have any kind of vibe at all that it's something they're actually looking at.
Yeah. Well, he basically, when was that agreed to? I guess he's going to be traded eligible by the deadline, I think. I think that it'll 6 months will have elapsed because of the Melo rule, where you can't extend and trade a guy anymore, or it has to be a very limited extension like the Kyle Lowry one. So I think he does have value, but he shouldn't. That's my view. Okay, next one here. Any of these looking sexy to you?
So this is an interesting question here by Reverend Romulus. Is there any real value in the Blazers having cap room this offseason, or should they be trying to maximize their expiring contracts through trades before the deadline? Yes and yes is what I would say. They should be trying to take their expirings and turn it into a bird in hand in terms of a player who's under contract for next season. But I also think they're in an interesting position if they are able to get around $20 million or so in cap room, which seems fairly gettable for them, depending on what they do. And the reason I say that is that puts you in a position where you're above the mid-level. There's basically no good teams that have cap room. And I mean, I know Portland is not a good team this year, but they project as a good team when you go out a year, and Nurkic is back, and you know, you have Zach Collins and you still have Lillard and whatnot. And so they're in a pretty favorable position to get whoever it is that might be out there. And it's not a great market, but there's going to be somebody who's at least pretty good that they're going to be in a strong position to get. And in a market like Portland, you're usually not. So I think step one still is you try to trade for that. But I do think there's an advantage to them being a cap room team.
All right, Sacramento time here. Bunch of questions about the Kings. Start with Sean Murray. If you're the Kings, how do you build around De'Aaron Fox and Bagley? What types of players? And this is a tough one to me, John, because I'm really struggling to know what Bagley is. He on paper seems like a guy that might be a little difficult to fit around.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first question is, should we build around Fox and Bagley? And then you get to the question of how. I think, you know, Fox really made a huge step forward last year. It looked fantastic. The beginning of this year was not so great. I want to see how he looks when he comes back from injury. Bagley, I think there's still a lot of questions about. I think, you know, even watching him last night against the Knicks, there were, you know, there's still those holes in his defensive game and the things he doesn't read quite as well. He's not a three-point shooter, but he's not really a center either. So there's some weird fit issues with him on almost any good team. So the patient strategy is probably going to be the best one in SAC right now. Just kind of let these guys develop and see what they're going to be for another 6 months to a year before you start launching into decisions.
Is Luke Walton doing a good job with the Kings at Dan Sach? I think, especially from an emotional standpoint, after that 0-5 start, you would have to say so.
Yes.
And I think his life has been made easier in some ways by the absence of Bagley. Now that he is back, I think Bagley has said that he expects to start. I think the front office expects him to start. There's been a large investment in him and took him over Luka Doncic famously.
Yeah.
So now the challenge really begins.
Right. Because Bielitsa and Holmes have been really good this whole stretch. And like Bagley is, I think, pretty clearly inferior to that right now. So working that back to the mix is going to be challenging. And it also takes away from some of the lineups with Barnes at the four and really pushes Barnes back to being like a full-time three, which I think is not always great. So,
all right, next question. We got a ton of them, so we'll do a lightning round here.
Okay.
What's behind the Kings' recent improvement? And with Fox returning, are they a favorite for the eighth seed?
Boy, I hesitate to anoint any of these teams a favorite for the eighth seed or seven for that matter. We got to pick two of them. And just anytime you believe in one of them for a second, they do exactly what Sac did last night and lose at home to New York. So I think it's going to depend in part on in-season moves, who decides they really want to be in the playoff race and who decides this is not even worth our bothering and we're just going to play for next year. All right. I lost my train a little here.
Well here, I can chime in a little bit. I mean, last 2 weeks, 19th on offense, 17th on defense. They have actually been lucky to get to 11 and 14. They have a negative 4.3 net rating on the season. Part of that was just because they just had some massive blowouts right at the beginning in that 0-5 start.
Yep.
But with Bagley coming back, Fox coming back, it does seem like Walton's going to have to juggle the rotations correctly. You know, I thought this was a 500-ish team when healthy. I wouldn't say they're a favorite, but I do think they'll be in the mix. And these teams don't look like they're about to go run away and hide. Your Phoenix, your Oklahoma City, now those teams that have better point differentials. Sacramento at least has enough depth that they can withstand injuries, I think, better than some of these other teams.
And I do think getting Fox back will have an impact because they're getting no offense at all from the point guard spot. They're playing Buddy Hield as the backup one. Getting Fox back into that mix, I think, is going to make a large difference.
Well, back to Walton, too. I want to see if they're actually going to start running now because they've been playing at one of the slower paces in the NBA. But Fox is really the guy who makes it run. And Bagley, too. Bagley is great at running the floor. Always love to hear that about a big. I wouldn't call them a favorite, but I would consider them to be in the mix for sure. Okay, let's move to San Antonio here. You had one that you wanted to spend a bunch of time on here.
What are some trade scenarios? Oh, I'm sorry. This is Buddy Scott NBAS. What are some trade scenarios for Aldridge and DeRozan that the Spurs would realistically entertain given their history of no in-season trades and their wanting to remain competitive with Pop? And is it too early to pull the plug on this Spurs team? I am ready to pull the plug. I don't know about you, Nate.
They should have pulled the plug on it when they traded Kawhi Leonard a year and a half ago.
Yeah, or at the very least, at the end of last season, you know, when it became clear, you know, that they were getting older and they weren't going to contend. And they, you know, I will say, I mean, having been on the inside for this and been in a similar situation with a similar type team, you know, we didn't have five rings and shit, but, you know, we were a good team that was getting older and it was clearly time, but it's just, it's hard to turn that ocean liner around, man. And get all the stakeholders really aligned to the idea that, like, hey, I know we made the playoffs last year, but now it's time for us to suck for a little while, you know? And so that's, I'm sure they're facing a similar challenge. And it's time, though. I mean, Aldridge is 34, DeRozan is 30. Neither of them are making the All-Star team this year or getting anywhere close to it. And you look at the rest of the roster, I mean, Mills is 31, Gay is 33. Like all the players they're counting on to be their big minutes guys are in their 30s and not really delivering at a high level anymore. So,
I mean, they could trade DeRozan to me and like not really be any worse.
Well, there's that too. Yeah. I which exactly that you could say the same thing for Aldridge, really. And, you know, can they tilt their offense to be a little less, you know, post up and long two happy. I mean, they still have a good offense playing that way, but you can see now how much money they left on the table with Bertans by playing the way they did, as opposed to, you know, maybe a little more open 3-point friendly style. And defensively, they're just not good.
No, I mean, and Aldridge and DeRozan are actually their numbers superficially are not terrible, but you know, Aldridge I think has really slipped defensively. DeRozan has never been good defensively. He just causes so many fit problems for you. So, no, I think they need to move into the mode of, you know, what do you have in Derek White and DeJounte Murray? Can those guys play together? Especially White has shot the ball okay from three. Like, let him bomb away, explore the studio space a little bit. Patty Mills is someone I think they should really seriously consider moving as well, especially now. His value will never be higher. He's got $12 million left after this year.
Yeah,
on his contract, but I think there are a lot of teams that just have nothing at point guard that could really use. I mean, the Wolves, I'm sure, would be very happy to have him if they're trying to make a playoff push.
What about Mills on the Lakers playing off the ball with LeBron and AD?
Yeah, I mean, you run into the trouble of the matching salary there since they struggle to have anyone to trade that because they signed all these 1 year no trade guys because they're bird rights. But no, I would like him there. I mean, he'd be a great backup point guard for Phoenix, for instance.
Yeah.
Could play a little two for you as well. Have Rubio guard the two on defense. So I think he would have some value. Gay, we talked about him on a previous program. So now trade scenarios for Aldridge and DeRozan. And that's when it really gets difficult because who really wants the guys? DeRozan is probably going to opt in, right, at this point?
You would think so, right? All right, let me throw some shit at the wall here.
Okay.
Ibaka and Powell for DeRozan.
Yeah, no,
I don't think Toronto does that.
No. Well, I mean, I guess going through to 2021, I think Toronto, yeah, I don't see them doing that, especially because, and would DeRozan, would he be happy to go back there again?
It would be a little awkward, right?
No, it doesn't seem that way. But no, so sorry, that shit is sliding down the wall. It is not sticking there at all. Someone is gonna have to clean that up. Probably me.
Yeah, what I mean, who's really in the market for? I tell you who might actually have a use for DeRozan with the way he plays, a guy who can just like soak up a lot of offense and at least get you to okay. What about DeRozan in Orlando?
Yeah, that's one that makes a little more sense to me. But what's the asset going back there?
Well, there are two questions here. One, is DeRozan worth an asset at this point?
Yeah, well, so $28 million player option next year.
Yeah, it's a tough one, right?
Yeah, actually, that reminds me. I'm going to edit my spreadsheet now to have him projected as opting in. Thanks for reminding me.
Yeah, you would think at this point, right? But what is it that Orlando, because Orlando's going to look at it like, oh, to get to that 28, all right, we'll send you, Aminu and DJ Augustine and whatever else we have
The
lying
ghost
around. And
of Timofey Mozgov.
yeah, exactly. And I'm sure the Spurs would want more than that, but how do you? Again, one of the things that hurts the trade market as a whole is just we don't have a lot of these like real trash contracts that you can throw into a deal. Is like, hey, we're getting a first, but we have to pay Solomon Hill for 3 years. Like those kinds of deals that we saw the last couple of years, and I think those things really grease trades a lot of times because both teams can declare victory a little more rather than just something like this where it's just. Teams are just going to want to trade like slop expirings for DeRozan, and you can't sell that in San Antonio.
All right, let's finish up here with the Utah Jazz.
right.
Colby Hall at skip underscore wow. What are John's thoughts on the struggles Mike Conley is going through in Utah?
Oh, there will be no Conley slander on this program. All right, Mike Conley. I do have thoughts on him in Utah. So the biggest thing I see. So there's definitely some make or miss element to it. When you look at the season he's having, but he's getting to the rim a lot less. And the thing I really see is that the adjustment for him playing with Gobert after a decade of plus of playing with Mark is a much more profound one than I had considered when the trade was made. I really thought with more spacing around him that he would blow up this year. And it hasn't happened. And when you watch him run that pick and roll, he's looking for that pocket pass, that bounce pass that he was so good at with Mark. And when you make that pass to Rudy Gobert, it's just not a threatening play. And the thing that's threatening with him is the lob, and it's late, which is usually like after Mike has shot his floater, basically. And it's not a pass that he's had to throw for. I mean, we had one lob guy, and it was Brandon Wright, and he was healthy for like a week. And so now it just completely changes his MO on that pick and roll. And I think that's the thing that's really been an issue for him. The last couple games before he went out, I thought he was adjusting a little better, hit the lob a little more. So I'm really interested to see as the season goes on if he gets more comfortable with that because it's really not a play that's been there for him since he played with Greg Oden in AAU, right? So,
Yeah.
but
Well,
he's got to get more shots at the rim though. His floater percentage is a little down. I think that'll just come up
way down,
naturally. Yeah.
way down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, mid-range twos as well, 30%. I mean, shooting like when you look at everything from the restricted area to the 3-point line, he's like 32% or something like that.
It was crazy. I mean, like even that first game he played where he shot like one of 16 or whatever, like every single right hand floater was short. And so I just but I that's not a thing that would worry me as much, just because the
Well, so
history and we
I
know
got something that worries
maker
me.
okay, give it to me.
49% at the rim. And you mentioned he's not getting there and the 49%. And I do think that may be, certainly that could be age, but that also might be related to the pick and roll, where I think with Marc Gasol popping, now you can get to the basket on some of those quick attacks, flip a shot up before the help can arrive. With Gobert is rolling, so his man is in the vicinity.
Yeah,
if you can't get the lob to Gobert, he's just not going to be able to get a shot up, or it's going to be, you know, he's not an athletic finisher. I think also another thing that's hurt him, he was one of the best guys in the league at that bullshit, feel some contact on the perimeter, barf up a shot, and get two free throws. You know, and once they took that away a couple of years ago, I mean, he still was effective last year.
Yeah, he was still really good last year, though, and he missed almost the whole season before. But yeah, that 16-17 season, he got the second half of that year, he really mastered that. He got so many bullshit three-shot fouls on that move. You know, it's like the Lou Williams tangle your guy's arm and go up with it. Like, he had mastered that. There's no question.
Yeah. All right. Well, this was fun. Let's get out of here.
Okay. Well, thanks everyone for joining us, and I want everyone to have a great holiday, and be sure to download our next podcast over Christmas week too, because we're going to put one out, so make sure you don't miss us. Follow us on Twitter at John Hollinger, at Nate Duncan NBA, and thanks again for listening.